This is the ZBooks Successful Authors Podcast with Eric Z. We're going to learn the truth about ebooks.
Welcome to the ZBooks Successful Authors Podcast. And today, I have the honor to have one of the most successful freelancers in the world. And she also happens to be a very successful ebook author. Her name is Lise Cartwright, and she's in Australia. Welcome, Lisa. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
It's snowing here in Germany. There are snowflakes right in my window. How's it in Australia?
It's pretty hot. It's about 27 degrees Celsius, and what are we, 6:30 in the morning here? So it's quite warm.
And it is 9:40 p.m. at night here, and it's about like it's minus one.
Yeah.
How many degrees is it?
It's 27 degrees Celsius.
Oh, man, this is so funny. Yeah. Yeah.
Completely opposite ends of the spectrum.
Cool. So let's talk about the obvious. You've got a launch. You're in the middle of a launch right now, and thanks for taking the time. I know how hectic a launch can be, and tell us about your launch.
Yes, so it's interesting because, like you said, I'm a freelancer, and now I'm also an author. So what I've done is combined the two things together, really, and I wrote a book called Side Hustle Blueprint, which is all about how I basically transitioned out of my full-time job into freelance writing and then continuing forward and becoming an author. And I've had quite a few people reach out to me who have read the book and said it would be amazing to have a course that supported that. So that's what I've just created. It's called Side Hustle Blueprint, just like the book. And so I'm just in the middle of launching that at the moment. So the course is pretty in-depth. There's tons of videos, support material, a couple of the Outsource Freelancing Success books that I've written that support the business side of things inside the course as well. There's quite a few bonuses that people will find as I go through the course that will just kind of pop up that I haven't mentioned anywhere. So a few secrets as you go through the course. So yeah, so just going, it's just basically about helping people who want to start a side hustle, figure out how to do that and how to be profitable within 30 days.
Right. And
That's all right. I was going to say, because that's definitely achievable. I think people think that it's really hard to start, and that's probably the feedback that I've got the most is, you know, how do you start, or what do I even do as a side hustle? I don't have any skills. And when you go through the process and the exercises within, you know, the very first module is completely focused on how to identify a skill or an idea. You know, it could be anything. So it's not just for online stuff. Like, it does cover people that, you know, are craft or creative orientated as well. So
right. And you you escaped corporate Australia, right? So you're speaking from experience. Mm-hmm. You're going full time, and you started it as a side hustle.
Yes.
And this is what really interests me, because this is where a lot of people are at, is so you're doing 8 hours, 9 hours a day. Where do you get the time for the side hustle? Maybe you only have 1 hour a day. Is that enough?
Yeah, look, it's when I started doing the side hustle, I was single, and so I had disposable time. You know, when you're working a full-time job, you generally have disposable income, but you also have disposable time. So it was, for me, a conscious decision to go, okay, well, I'm going to sacrifice sitting in front of the TV 2-3 hours a night and instead focus it on my side hustle, because for me, I wanted to transition out of work. I didn't want to be staying in there. So for some people, all they want to do is make some extra money. They're quite happy in the job that they're in, but maybe they don't have the ability to earn more in the job that they're in. So a side hustle is a great way to earn that extra income and maybe, you know, pursue a passion or a hobby that you've always wanted to do, and then you can actually make some money from it. So it's kind of a two-pronged approach. So if you are just looking to make have, you know, an additional income stream, not necessarily wanting to transition out of your job, then you could easily get away with doing a side hustle for 1-2 hours a day outside of your normal job. Like, it doesn't have to be. I think the focus for most people should be, you know, and it's, you know, my tagline is do what you love.
Right.
So if you're not doing something that you don't enjoy doing, then you're not going to continue doing it. If you're doing something that you love, then it's kind of, it's not work. Like, you don't view it in the same way.
So
I think when it comes to starting a side hustle or doing something on the side, it's understanding what your why or what your drive is behind that. And that's probably one of the very first things that I cover in the course, is figuring out what that is.
And if you're a newbie and you don't, you don't want to just do it as a side hustle, but you really want to, you want to escape your job, what should a newbie's focus be on?
So that is definitely focusing on your easiest skill to get started with. So you can have, like, in the very first module of the course, it takes a good sort of 3 or 4 days to go through. So I'll just say that with the course, it's designed to be done in 30 minutes a day. So you're not doing any more than that a day. So I'm cognizant of the fact that people are working full time and that, you know, you don't want to add to it. So 30 minutes a day. And so the first module will basically take you a week to sort of progress through, and it's all about identifying that skill set. So if you are looking to get out of your job, it is sitting down and figuring out what is going to be the most profitable. So it may not necessarily be something that you want to do long term, but it is the easiest for you to get started with. And I think once people understand that, once you're starting a side hustle, doesn't have to be your long-term game plan, then it actually makes things a lot easier. So when I started out doing search engine optimization, you know, and I had no passion. No passion for that at all. it's just not something that I enjoyed doing, but it was sort of in my skill set, or I was able to learn it very quickly. So I started out with search engine optimization, then moved into SEO writing.
What's that?
Because it's a natural progression. So SEO writing is basically writing for specific businesses where you are keyword riching the articles that you're writing. The content is focused around a specific keyword. And so that it's really probably more evolved now. You probably wouldn't find many people specifically doing SEO writing. It is more, you're writing
it's
on a blog.
It's not just finding emotionally charged words, is it?
No, it's not. It's about finding, identifying keywords that people are looking for a specific, you know, if someone's searching for a specific product or, you know, searching for a specific key term, then developing content around that.
So I went to your website and I got all of this marvelous free content, and I did your 7-day challenge. Do you need to do that before you go to your course? Because your free content is awesome. Thank you.
That's okay. No problem. That's just basic. It's a teaser to get people thinking.
But you have all this stuff about your Upwork profile, and that is really excellent stuff. It's a mini course in itself, and I'm still doing my Upwork profile, and and it's an excellent start, actually. I would tell everybody listening, go straight to her website, Lisa's website, and go get the free stuff and then dive in with the big course.
Yeah. Upwork is an interesting space, and it's where I started. So, you know, when it was Odesk, that's how I got, that's how I transitioned out of my full-time job, was purely working on Odesk, or, you know, Upwork now. Was working with clients through that. So I have a fairly good intimate knowledge of how Upwork works. And really, it's just like any other platform. You have to put in the time to build up your profile there. It's all about ratings on platforms like that. Because I think what people forget is when they're landing on that platform, you might be super experienced in what it is that you do, but your potential client doesn't know that. They have no idea what your history or background is at all. That's all right, you go.
So is that the best platform for newbies, or is that just like the Amazon of platforms?
Yeah, I would always start with Upwork if your skill lends itself to be online. Like, if that's what, you know, predominantly most people will have that, because it is the easiest place to get started. But you have to remember that when you're starting on a platform like that, because you don't have any previous ranking or rating or anything like that, that you do have to start with this really low paying jobs. Because that is the thing with Upwork. There is such a broad spectrum of low paying jobs right through to really high paying jobs, but you can't access the high paying jobs until you've done your due diligence, basically, until you've paid your dues and got some ratings. And I'm not saying that you need to be pricing yourself really low for a long period of time. I'm talking about 3 weeks max, getting 3 to 4 jobs under your belt that are low paying, then you transition into being your normal rate.
So this must be a burning question for all the newbies out there that haven't tried it at all. Like me, how much do you charge? So let me give you an example. I'm an expert ebook formatter, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not bragging. That's just, that's my platform.
That's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, but I'm a newbie on Upwork. So how much could I charge to format, I don't know, a 10,000 word book or something?
So it really depends. So Upwork works a little bit differently. So what you would be doing is you would set your rate to probably be around, I don't know, $15 an hour. So you have to set an hourly rate. You don't have any choice about that. Oh. But then when you're going and looking at jobs, you can adjust that accordingly. So you can lower it, you can increase it, depending on whoever you're pitching, basically. Mm-hmm. So what you would do is jump on there and just try and find as many jobs as you can that fit your skill.
Yeah.
And just lowball them. So you just
What do you call that? Outbid them or underbid them.
Yeah, you're not underbidding, but you just want to get the aim of the game with Upwork when you're first starting is to get ratings. And the only way to do that is to get jobs. And the only way to do that initially is to start with the low paying stuff. So what I teach inside the course is that when you're going in there, find you can either do a search based on your skill or do a search based on dollar amount, which a lot of people don't realize that they can do. So when you're searching for a job on Upwork, most people search by skill, but you can actually put in a dollar figure. So you could put in, you want to find something that is not going to take you very long to do, because you also don't want to be spending 2-3 hours and getting paid $15. Like, you just, that's ridiculous. So it's just finding a balance between something that's going to not take you very long to do that is also low paying. So it's just a case of going in and saying, okay, type in $30. It will bring up everything that is on Upwork listed for $30 and filtering that through to find something that you can do that's quick to get those runs on the board, basically.
What I like about your free, I think it was the 7-day challenge, because I've been all over your website already. And you kind of have a validation phase where you research if your skills would be profitable on Upwork, and you look and see, are people actually buying it, offering it, and is it a good thing to go with? And I hit all the green lights on your thing there. And I'm sure this is then continued in the course. What's the first phase of your course? Is something like that?
Yeah, so the first phase of the course is digging a little bit deeper into identifying that skill. So it just basically builds upon that 7-day freebie. So it goes into that. But it's also, once you've identified that, there are also a lot of market conditions that you need to take into consideration as well. And I think that's where a lot of people, when they're just starting out, maybe ignore or just don't understand that. So it's not just that, awesome, you've just validated your skill, but it's looking for that demand. So, and if there's no demand for it, then...
Sorry, did I cut you off again?
No, not at all.
I have so many things to ask you, And so tell us about your course. What do you call it? The outline. You start, how many days does it take? And at the end, you're like a millionaire freelancer?
So the course is designed to take 4 weeks. So it's, it's basically 3 days. So because there's a lot of stuff to cover, when I sat down to figure this out, I was like, okay, well, what is it that you need to know in that first 30 days to go from completely having nothing to having something that you can actually run with
And you help the people directly or over the shoulder?
Yeah, so I'm part of a community called Location Rebel. Sean Ogle runs that. So I've been part of Location Rebel since 2011, which is when Sean launched it. So within Location Rebel, I'm always, you know, this is basically how I came up with the book originally, was that I was helping so many people inside there with these sorts of questions, and specifically around Upwork, but even more so now, just in general, about how to even start a side hustle, you know, what it is that you could even do. So that, so that's basically how that came about.
And this is the, I don't want to say typical, but the normal video and then homework and then feedback or course.
So it's all videos with my lovely face in front of you talking at you. And then at the end of each module, so they're all broken down into small modules. You can either provide comment, and, but yeah, at the end of each video, there is an action item that you need to to go ahead and do. So there's no sort of quiz as such for you to answer. It's very much about you taking action and building your side hustle in that 30 days.
But 4 weeks, that sounds pretty extensive.
It is extensive, yes.
And it is how much right now if you get on right now? You launched already. Is it too late to get on?
No. It is perfectly fine to get on. So it's launched at $197, but because I love you, Eric, I'm offering your subscribers a 70% discount.
Awesome. Awesome. How do they get it?
So if they enter ZBooks, that's the coupon code when they land on the website. So I'll send that through because it's a bit of a mouthful.
Yep.
And there's lots of dashes and stuff. So it's
that
on the
That is so awesome.
Yeah,
Thank you.
That's okay. No problem.
So what is the funniest or strangest or most uncomfortable thing that happened when working for a client on Upwork?
Oh, it's when they stalk you.
Not cool.
And I think, well, you know, it's an online thing, and Upwork's very good at protecting your privacy, but the minute that you start working with somebody, they can, you know, you're handing over Skype details.
Of course.
And it doesn't take long for someone to be able to kind of find you in other places online. So me, when I first started out, I needed to have quite a separation between my day job and my side hustle. So I was working under a pen name. And this is something that I there's a whole lesson around it in the course about pen names, because I think other, you know, people are concerned about their current workplace finding out that they're doing something on the side. So there's a bit of a moral dilemma when it comes to that portion of the course. But for me, it was just like, you know what, I checked my contract and it basically just said that I couldn't do anything in the space that I was working in. So I couldn't approach clients and try and take them for myself. And so I was working in a completely different thing, but I also didn't want my boss to have any idea that I was planning to leave. So I wanted to fly under the radar. So I was, you know, working under a pen name. So I just remember on Upwork, a client, what I wasn't smart or didn't really think, consider, was that my Skype name was in my normal name. And asking, you know, having to deal with that question, well, how come you're like this on Upwork, but your Skype name's this? And having that conversation was pretty an interesting one. So from that point forward, I made sure that if I was using a pen name, that everything was in the pen name name. I work under my normal name now, obviously. But when
Your profile has to be airtight before you start.
Definitely. Okay. You want to make sure that you don't leave yourself open to those.
Well, it's amazing.
And, you know, it's an interesting situation to be in. And the client was totally fine, you know, once I explained. But having to explain that is it's a little embarrassing.
How do you deal with refunds, or have you ever had to cancel a client?
I've never had to do a refund, but I have had to what I like to call fire a client a couple of times. So I think it's important to understand that once you start a side hustle, once you start freelancing, you know, once you're entering into a customer client relationship, that you understand that you are not having to take whatever they dish out to you. So mm-hmm. you are in, you know, that whole the customer is always right isn't right. necessarily true, particularly mm-hmm. when it comes to your own business. So there have been a number of times where I have started to work with a client and gone, mm-hmm. There are some red flags here that I'm just not enjoying. And it's how you handle it. Mm-hmm. You need to be very diplomatic.
Do you have any standard sentences or comebacks?
Yeah,
or...
Generally what happens is, and the thing is you need to do it very early on in the process. Like if you have identified that you've started working with a client and then you're just starting to get some red flags. And when I say red flags, I'm talking like things like they start changing the project starts morphing into something else that wasn't agreed mm-hmm. to in the contract. They start pushing deadlines out. Communication isn't answered, you know, within a certain amount of time. You know, just things like that, that
right.
you get a feeling that something isn't quite right. So generally what I would turn around and do is, and you need to make sure that within your contract that you've got some kind of buffer around that so that if there is, and I offer the contract templates within the course so that you don't have to worry about that because it's quite a legal path to have those contracts created. So basically it just says that for whatever reason, either party can cancel the contract and give, you know, 7 days written notice or 2 days written notice, whatever it is. What I generally do is contact them and say, look, I always blame it on me. It's never anything to do with them. You obviously don't want to say I'm not working with you anymore because you not a great client.
Right.
You basically just want to say I've taken on too much work or something else has come up or for personal reasons I'm no longer able to continue with this contract. I will finish up until the point in the contract where I have to give you this amount of notice. You know, I wish you all the best. And generally what I might do then is suggest an alternative person that might be able to work with them. So I have, you know, peers, you know, I've got colleagues and stuff that I work with and we all work differently. Uh-huh. So it's not, I have never had to fire a client based on anything bad. It's more been the working relationship isn't quite how I choose to work.
So you tried to do a judo pivot or an aikido pivot.
Exactly. And I've only ever had to do that twice in the last 2 years.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah.
I would like to get a bit into ebooks here and then come back to your course before I forget all my questions for the ebooks. but first, a trick question. What is your favorite tea?
Chai. I'm a huge chai tea.
A lot of milk?
Yeah, chai lattes. I have one every day.
You make them yourself?
Yes, I do.
What's your recipe? Or maybe we can put that as a bonus at the end of the post, right?
Yes. So, no, there is a tea company here called T2, which, you know, has got, I don't know, 100+ tea varieties. And so I just always go in there and they've always got about 3 different chai tea. And I like what they call a spicy. It's got like a spice. I don't know. Unless you've had chai, it's very hard to explain what it tastes like. But so I like mine quite spicy and I have quite a bit of cinnamon in mine. And then, yes, I use like a milk. You know how you, when you, if you have a,
right.
I don't drink coffee. So if you're having a cappuccino or something like that, and you've got the frothy milk. I do the same with the chai latte. So
do you have Oreos in Australia?
Yes, we do. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Okay. That was another trick question. So, okay. Let's get serious again. Okay. So, so why the ebooks? Was freelancing not passive enough for you, or you're just making your product palette bigger, or?
Yeah. Look, I've always been about diversification. So I never wanted to be in a situation like I was in my job where my eggs were all in one basket in terms of an income stream. So once I had got the freelancing business to a certain point, I was like, okay, well, how am I going to diversify? What other income streams am I going to look at? Mm-hmm. And it was at that sort of point that I came across Steve Scott and all the stuff that he was doing. And I was already freelance writing. So I was just like, and I'd always thought about writing books, but I just found it so intimidating. You know, if you've never written a book before, you look at a physical book and you think, how does that even come together? Yeah. So I probably researched and looked around and tried to figure it out for a good 6 months.
And then you found Chandler and Tyler Wagner at the, what's it called now? The book school?
Self-publishing school.
All right. Yeah, and that's how I found out about you was, I think it was Sean Ogle's post where you outlined this, and you do it again on your own website, and your content is so awesome. I always think of making a product out of it, you know? And so I love this Chandler's mind mapping technique and stuff. And so you made your first book, and it was a hit?
It was. Awesome. Completely surprisingly. Like when I entered self-publishing school, I had already had a book that I had written that I had tried to sell with minimal success. I hadn't gone down the Amazon path, so I'd sold it on my website and that was it.
Right.
So I'd come into the course thinking that I would rework that book.
Right.
But one of the very first things that they teach you is validating your book idea.
Exactly.
Especially from a nonfiction perspective. It's different from a fiction perspective. I think you could literally write any fiction book and find an audience. But from a nonfiction perspective, and particularly if you're going to sell on Amazon, you need to do a bit of due diligence because not every niche is going to work on Amazon.
Yeah.
So when I did the initial research, I found that my initial book idea just wasn't going to fly on Amazon at all. Like it wasn't even searched for. There was no market for it. And so I remember having a conversation with Chandler because he was my coach going, okay, that's not validated. What now? What am I going to do? And he's like, well, at least you're going to have to sit down and start from scratch and write something brand new.
And this was
No, it's okay.
This was a reader question, by the way. He said, you mentioned that you were originally going to repurpose your existing book. But what made you change your mind? And this is my favorite question because it didn't pass validation. And this is what most, especially nonfiction authors, don't know. And I'm always going on about it. And I ask people, you know, could you do that? Look at what Lise Cartwright did. She had a book and she decided not to publish it. Can you do that? You know? Very important.
It's very important because if you know, you don't want to go to the time and effort of writing a book to then turn around and be completely disillusioned because it didn't pan out on Amazon. You have to think about it like you have to put your business hat on. You know, you've got to step back and go, okay, to find the readers and to find the people that I'm going to help with this book, you need a platform. And Amazon is the biggest platform.
Yeah.
If you are someone sitting there going, well, Lise, I already have a huge list. I'm not going to worry about Amazon. Then you're in a great position. You know, it's figuring out. You know, you could have a fantastic idea, but it's figuring out which platform you're going to put that on. So if you're going the Amazon platform, you need to validate. If you do not validate, and you know, there's so many tools available now that makes it super easy. Yeah. I use Kindle Spy. I'm sure that you. Super easy to validate a book idea within 2-3 minutes.
This is
In self-publishing school, they take you through the manual process, which can take a couple of hours to do, but it's good to do a couple of times so that you understand the process and then you can read the results in Kindle Spy a lot easier once you understand that framework. So, my original book idea was around freelancing and working on Upwork. It is not something that is searched on Amazon at all. It's searched on Google, so it's two separate things. So you have to, that's why you have to definitely think about the platform that you're looking at publishing on.
Yeah. So if you're going to go the Google way, then you get your 1,000 true fans first and bring them to Amazon with you.
Yes, exactly.
So No Gym Needed was your first book?
It was, yes.
Nice. And did the one question from the reader was, it doesn't directly follow from your blog, Outsourced mm-hmm. Freelance Success. Did you have any doubts or hesitation to go to a different topic?
I did. And it does loosely tie in. And I had this dilemma when I started writing it, because I didn't see myself, you know, I'm not a fitness coach. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, I've not done any personal training. This book was all from personal experience. Mm-hmm. And I sort of said that to Chandler. I said, you know, do I need to now create a pen name? Because really this is kind of separate from, you know, Outsource Freelancing Success. It's just, mm-hmm. he said, if you are talking about it from your perspective, he said, which is you're a freelancer working from home, you don't have a lot of time. He said, it actually does tie in. And it does tie in because throughout yep. the book, I do talk about the struggles that I had. You know, No Gym Needed came about because I could not find exercises that I could do at home that were less than 30 minutes, because I hate to exercise. I'm not someone that enjoys it at all.
No, you're not the only one. So.
But I understand that you need to do something. If you want your body to continue to support you, mm-hmm. you have to exercise it in some way. But you don't need to spend, you know, an hour to 2 hours at the gym to do that. So that was the whole premise of how No Gym Needed came about. So it was an interesting process. And once I went through the process of mind mapping, outlining, and writing the book, I became addicted yeah. to writing books.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think you did that on Sean Ogle, but you also do that on your blog for sure. You go over the validation techniques, and that's one of my favorite things. That's like my specialty. And then you go over the whole, you got, what is it, 2 or 3 posts, yeah? Series. Mm-hmm. And so if anybody's out there listening, then go to Lisa's blog for more details. It's an awesome post. It's mandatory reading for all of my readers. It's mandatory reading before you publish a book, you know.
Yes.
And Chandler in the book publishing school almost mm-hmm. always does this free launch day or days. And I read in your blog, that the post I was talking about, that you're going to the 99-cent launch. Can you tell mm-hmm. us about that?
Sure. So, yeah, on the post that I did on Sean Ogle's blog, I talked about with the No Gym Needed book, I did a free launch. But after that point forward, I decided that I would not worry about doing a free launch. And I moved into doing a 99-cent launch, which is what Steve Scott
yes.
teaches. So mm-hmm. there's kind of a little bit of a caveat with that, in that if you're going down the 99-cent launch path, then you need to have a list that kind of supports that. So
how much? How many?
Actually, it doesn't need to be huge. They just need to be engaged. So So there's a difference.
How do you keep
them
warm then?
We need to be talking to them.
Okay.
So I do a newsletter every week where I'm just chatting, how I'm chatting to you right now. This is literally how I talk in my newsletters. They're very low. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to, I'm just very conversationalist. So I have a weekly newsletter that goes out, and you know, I've got blog posts and stuff like that. So that's how I keep in touch with my list, and they're fairly engaged. You know, I have people responding back to me, mm-hmm. Asking questions. So that's the caveat, is that if you are deciding what kind of launch strategy to go, yeah. it's pretty simple. If you don't have a list, go the free route, because you can build your list very quickly, provided that you have that lead magnet in the front that you're actually asking for people's email addresses. Right. If you're not doing that, you need to do that now.
Yes, yes. Okay, so then the 99-cent launch is mm-hmm. you put the book manually at 99 cents for
yes.
5 days or something?
Yes,
and
yeah.
just
five,
blast
five
your list.
5 to 7 days, yeah. Okay. So you do it. It's a pretty simple strategy. Steve Scott, I literally follow what Steve does. So
yeah.
it's literally a week before your launch, you put it to 99 cents. It's gone out to your street team to do their reviews. So you've got some reviews on the day that you launch.
Mm-hmm.
You launch and you blast your email list, and then you'll have some paid advertising throughout the week. You'll probably do a BuckBooks promotion.
Right.
And then it's just basically sending an email to your list sprinkled throughout that week based on certain criteria. So if they open the first email but don't click, then they would get a new email. So anybody that opens the email and clicks, you don't want them to get that email again because they've already at least had a look at the book. You don't know if they've converted, but you at least know that they've clicked the link to purchase the book. And at 99 cents, it's kind of a no-brainer, really, for people to purchase the book. So, yeah, it's and you don't have to spend a lot in terms of paid advertising. I would probably spend $50.
That's on what advertising?
On a paid launch. So it just depends. It's always changing, but I always tend to do a buck books promo if you can get in. I know it's getting it's more and more difficult to get in. Yeah. And then I'll look at, depending on my genre, I now look at the sites where you can promote. And not all of them necessarily work for everybody. So I've started to record my stats to see what works. So then I might book in for a Book Zio one, and then there's a couple of gigs on Fiverr. And that's probably all that I'll do.
Book Zio, I've heard of them too.
Yeah, Book Zio, they are actually very, very good for both fiction and nonfiction.
Interesting.
So that's probably, I don't do too much because, you know, you don't want to waste too much money on a book launch, particularly if you haven't got a huge amount of money to throw at this sort of stuff. You know, if you're self-publishing, you know, you're wanting to do things on a budget. So, if you only had a small amount of money, Buck Books is where I would be throwing them.
That was my next question, actually, because I've read on their website that they're the second largest email list next to BookBub. Is that true?
That's correct.
So it's a big bump or what do you, a big push?
Yeah, it is. And they're relatively cheap. They used to be free, but now, you know, quite rightly they're charging. So for a nonfiction book, it's around the $32 mark. So it's not an expensive, I believe it's not an expensive place to go. And if that's all you did, you would be fine. As long as you were consistently sharing the book on social media and just connecting with people. So, I mean, it's, if you're going into a book launch, you don't want to do it in a silo. So you don't want to be doing it by yourself. You want to have made sure that you've connected with other authors that can support you and share the book for you. You know, if you wanted to, if you were in a specific niche and there was someone that had a similar book to you, you could cross promote. There's, you know, there's just lots of different ways that you can approach a launch. But if, for me, I definitely go the route of the 99 cent launch now because I have a list that I can at least reach out to. So, so your question was how many on the list. So when I did my first 99 cent launch, I only had 500 on that list. Not a huge amount of people.
Yeah, a lot more than my beginning authors, though, on ZBooks, though. So a lot of
people. Yes, so even if you had 200, basically if you have less than 200, then I would go the free launch route.
Okay.
One free launch would probably net you a couple of hundred subscribers.
Interesting. Well, those are some good benchmarks there. And tell us about Buck Books again, because if you go to their website now, you can't just order a launch. You have to do something with Archangel Inc. with them first.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they'll offer you the Buck Books.
Yes. The criteria has changed quite significantly. Was one of the first authors to get in Buck Books, and so now it's just for me, it's just an email to them saying, "Hey, I've got a book. Can I put it on?"
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is. I know it a lot trickier to get in now. If you're going down that route, just allow 2 or 3 months out that you need to be connecting with them that far out if you want to use Buck Books, so that you at least got that in place, because if you just try to contact them 3 weeks out from your launch, you probably won't get in.
Okay. Something totally different now. I read somewhere that you do keyword hygiene for your books every month. And whenever I do that, I'll lose categories and stuff, you know. So I'm just keeping my books where they're at right now. And and how does that work with you?
Yeah, so it's what I do is I'll go in and I'll take each of my keywords and I'll just run them through a search on Amazon and make sure that my book is on the first page and also in that top 5 search results. If it's not, then I will consider adjusting the keywords. So I don't move around my categories too much.
Okay, sorry. Really... Mm-hmm. How do you do that again? You search in Amazon for your book?
Yeah. So what I do is, so you know how you can have up to 7 keywords in the Kindle, right. You know, in
right.
KDP.
So yes.
I have a list of generally when I'm doing my initial research for keywords and stuff like that for the book. So this is nonfiction. I just want to make people understand I'm writing nonfiction, although
right,
I am
right.
writing a fiction book at the moment. I'm solely talking about nonfiction here. So I will have a list of keywords, and I will have more than 7 so that I know that I can alternate them if I need to. So I will initially have those 7 keywords, and I would have done some research to find sort of where they're ranking. And I use Merchant Words combined with
right.
Kindle Spy.
Right.
And so then what I'll do is every 30 days, I will take those keywords and then put them into the search bar in Amazon. You know, I'll just take that keyword or
yep.
keyword phrase, I should say, because they're generally not just one keyword. So for No Gym Needed, one of the keywords I have is at home workouts. So I will then jump on Amazon, put in at home workouts, change mm-hmm. the search to be Kindle store only.
Yeah.
And then I'll see where my book at is in the search results. So that's what I mean by going through and checking my keywords. So
okay, but what do you do if it's not high enough?
Yes. If it's fallen off the page or it's not in that sort of top 5 search results, then I'll go and have a look at the other keywords that I have sitting, and I just have a Google spreadsheet.
Right.
And then I will then take that keyword, look at it on Merchant Words, run it through Kindle Spy, also run it through an Amazon search, and see if I can rank for that. And if I can, then I will go and change that in my KDP area.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I'm looking for keywords that mm-hmm. aren't super, super competitive, because mm-hmm. as self-published authors, you can only, you know, you don't want to be trying to go after a keyword that's got 100,000 searches a month, unless your book is a high authority and you've got some traffic coming to it. So
right.
I'm looking at keywords that are sort of 30,000 and, you know, between 1,000 and 30,000 searches on Amazon.
Okay, because I was using Merchant Words, the free version,
mm-hmm.
and you know what most people do is, oh wow, look at that! That word has 1 million hits, so let's use it, right?
Mm-mm, you don't want to do that.
So 30 grand is the sweet spot.
Yeah, I tend to find that works for my books.
Okay,
now,
yeah,
fiction might be slightly different, so mm-hmm. It's just testing. So that's mm-hmm. why I say you want to be looking at those keywords every 30 days,
mm-hmm.
Just to see where they're at, and for categories. You probably don't want to, if your book is staying within the top sort of 20 to 40 in the best sellers category, if it's mm-hmm. staying in around the top, you know, that top 40,
mm-hmm.
top 20 is my benchmark. But
of course, first page.
Yeah, the first page. But, mm-hmm. you know, people will click over to the second page. So if it's not in the top 40, then that's when I consider changing the category.
So is Merchant Words worth it? How much does it cost?
So I think Merchant Words is $30 a month, but I got it at a discount a few years ago, and so mine's only $9.95 a month.
Nice, because I use the free version, and you only get 5 searches.
Yeah, you do. With the paid version, you can download the CSV file, so that's how you build up all those, you know, that list of keywords.
So, but the function in the free version, you can see the same thing?
You see the same thing, you're just limited to the results that you can actually view.
Okay, so you can kind of use that as a crux until you make it to the big league and pay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That's right. If you've purchased Kindle Spy, then I would also use that. You can, you know, they allow you to do a keyword search as well. So.
Yeah, but with Kindle Spy, it shows mm-hmm. the keywords only for like when you're on a book page. Doesn't really show you how the keywords rank, does it? It just shows you the words that are used on that page.
No. So if you – I'm just doing it right now while we're chatting. There is a couple of different features. So you can type in an actual keyword and it will bring up some results and it will tell you how popular it is. So if you are just on any website, so say you're not on Amazon and you click on Kindle Spy, you know, it'll say this location is not compatible with Spy. And then down the bottom, it gives you the option to do search a keyword or browse the categories. If you click on search a keyword mm-hmm. and I'm going to type in at home workouts.
Okay.
It's then going to give me some results around competition, all that sort of stuff. And so it's just, and then you can analyze it further. And it will say whether it's competitive, how popular it is, and what the potential is for it.
You know, I have Kindle Spy for, I don't know, almost a year now, and I never even use that function, man. Yeah. It's a good tool.
Yeah. It's really good. And so when you do the analyze, it will bring up all the books that have at-home workouts in the title and stuff like that. And then it's just a really good way
I've got the tool and I never used that. I'm going to make a video about that, darn it.
Yeah, so that's another great tool to have. So if you don't have Merchant Words, that would be the next thing that I would do as well.
Yeah, I love Kindle Spy. It's only $47 and no monthly fees, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and they're always updating it.
Yeah. So I've had this stance, you know, against freelancing for a while because you're trading your time for money. But if you know this guy, Brian Harris, he's a really hot entrepreneur right now, and he was in the Noah Kagan's course, which and he took it 1 year before me. So I'm just, you know, green with envy, of course. And he says freelancing is the fastest way to, you know, escape your desk job.
It is.
And that is an awesome. Yeah. So, yeah. So maybe I'll be doing some freelancing too. But what about that? Yeah, the passive income versus the, you know, you're trading your time for
passive
money
income.
Is freelancing. So.
Yeah, so it is. It's an interesting. I think. For me, freelancing is how I got started. So it's using it as a platform, particularly if you're in a spot where you're not quite sure what it is that you want to do. Maybe you're not happy in the career that you've chosen, but it would just be a mission to go back and learn a new skill and then transition into a new career. You're basically going full circle and starting from the bottom.
Yep.
What a side hustle allows you to do, and then freelancing on top of that, is to test the waters and see if you're, one, going to be any good at a new skill and whether you can actually make some money from it. So that's how I used freelancing. I knew that I didn't want to be trading time for dollars at all forever. It was it was a path to take. And if I'd never gone down that path, I would never have discovered, you know, writing books. You know, I was not a writer. I just want to say that I was not a writer before I started freelancing.
Wow.
No, not at all.
Awesome. Awesome.
I have no degree in writing. You know, I haven't done any courses or anything about how to be a writer at all.
Wow. And now you are.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's practice. The more that you do something, the more that you get better at it.
Yeah. And what you said earlier about the book, a lot of people are afraid because they're not an expert. So how could you write No Gym Needed? Well, you know what? Your experience is enough. Your life experience, you don't have to be an expert.
Exactly. And I say that right at the beginning. I preface it by saying, you know, I'm not a personal trainer. I'm not a fitness consultant, not a fitness coach. I haven't done any training. This is all based on personal experience. But it's all about relativity, so relative expert. And I love that terminology because you only need to know little more than the person reading your book to be considered someone that knows what they're talking about. And you know what? You can back it up with statistics and, and research and stuff like that. And you know, I'm about to bring out another version of No Gym Needed to update it. And you know, I'm going to be chatting to an actual personal trainer.
Cool.
So
working
with somebody so that we can just make sure that everything is on track. But yeah, it's just.
There is a very good. Oh, sorry. I cut you off again. There's a very good example of this. Her name is Oprah Winfrey. You know, she was not an expert, but she interviewed the experts and she became the authority, you know.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Well, you know how successfully she is, you know.
Exactly.
One question about ebooks again. Did you get hit by the new Amazon algorithm change? Did it hit you in what was that, July, August?
Yes, it did. So when they went from, you're talking about changing it to the Kindle pages.
Right, and it's also they changed the algorithm too, and they treat KDP Select books, they favor them over the other guys. They show them more.
They do.
And so I got hit
big. It's an interesting experiment. So when they changed from to the Kindle pages and going and saying that if you're not enrolled in Kindle Unlimited, then you're basically, your book is not as important.
Yep.
I didn't quite like that. So I pulled all my books out of Kindle Unlimited. I said, no, I do not want, I do not agree with that because it devalues the book. And I've done some experiments where I've put one book in for 3 months and then taken it out to see if it made any difference. And they've consistently every month dropped the pay, how much you get paid per page. So they started out high and then it's something ridiculous like 0.006 cents per page.
I'm thinking it's something more for series and fiction authors and not for nonfiction.
Yeah, it is definitely more geared towards fiction books and novels. So if you have a book that is 90,000 words, then you're probably going to do very well. So I think if you're a nonfiction author specifically, think about it before you sort of lock yourself in. But, I definitely encourage you to do it for 3 months to test it and then pull your book out and see what happens.
Right.
But if you're not locking yourself in, you do need to make sure that you're diversifying. So don't just leave it on Amazon if you're not enrolling it in KDP.
Yeah.
Put it on the platforms as well.
I'm a big, big fan of Dave Chesson and SEO and your own website and if you can do it right, then then you're not totally dependent on the big Zon.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I think it's prudent to just be aware of the changing landscape of self-publishing at the moment. And, Amazon up until July last year had very much been in favor of the self-published author. And it's changing. And you've got to remember Amazon's a business, so they are going to look after themselves first. So as long as you remember I think you won't have – and you protect yourself. And, again, it comes back to diversification and not having your eggs all in one basket.
So, Mark Coker from Smashwords, he wrote a really good article about the new payout and scheme from Amazon, and I'll just put that in the show notes later. Very, very interesting. And so I'm not a fan for nonfiction. I mean, I'm looking at how long I can flatline for weeks, I even made a video about it. I mean, they just gutted me. So okay, what who is your favorite author?
So Elizabeth Gilbert is probably my favorite author. I love her stuff. She's just and she's an amazing person. Like, she has a very she's a very active Facebook page. She's very open.
Elizabeth Gilbert, tell me about her books.
Most ladies would know who Elizabeth Gilbert is. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and they
the
movie with Julia Roberts. So that's
right now fame. I know. Okay.
Yes. So she's just and she's done this I'll find it, I'll send it to you, Eric. She's this amazing TED talk about being an author and how she goes about finding inspiration or waiting for the muse. It's a very interesting TED talk that she did, and it just talks about how she doesn't wait for the muse to show up. She sits in her chair and she just starts writing. Like, it's very much about that being that consistent, that it's not about waiting for the muse to come to you, because sometimes it just doesn't happen. It's about developing that habit of actually writing. But the way that she says it, I mean, she's a fiction writer, so she has a beautiful way of explaining things, and she is amazing.
I'll have to check that out, probably on YouTube, the TED Talk. Huh?
It is, it is. If you go onto YouTube and you do TED Talk, Elizabeth Gilbert, you'll find it.
Sounds good. My favorite question is, if you could have dinner with anyone, past or present, living or dead, who would that be?
Oh, that's a really tough one. I think I'm tossing up between two people, and they're both passed away. It would be either Marilyn Monroe or Martin Luther King.
Oh, yeah. Almost the same era, though, huh?
Yes, exactly. Almost the same era.
So you're in the 50s. You're a 50s girl.
Not really. I was born in the 70s, but you know, my parents are from the 50s, and I grew up, I guess, watching a lot of Marilyn Monroe. My mum is a massive Elvis Presley fan, so there is lots of that, those sorts of old school movies and stuff that we used to watch. And I loved Marilyn Monroe, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that I would love to ask her. And then Martin Luther King, he's just, what an amazing man.
I love his quotes. I'm always copying and pasting his quotes everywhere.
Exactly. I love it. Had a way of engaging and getting people on board. And yeah, his quotes are amazing. So yeah, so I'd probably go with those two people.
Okay. what is the future of ebooks or freelancing?
So I think we've pretty much touched on the ebook self-publishing path. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're going down that path, then you need to be thinking about it from a different perspective and not just thinking, okay, I'm just going to publish an ebook. You should do an ebook. You should do a paperback, potentially look at audio. And then also, if it's something that you're going to continue doing, what is the platform that sort of sits beneath that? Are you going to have a blog, or are you going to have a course that supports it? It's not thinking about it as just one single individual thing, because the reality is that if you just do, from a nonfiction perspective especially, if you just do the one thing, if you just do the ebook, then it's not going to survive.
Interesting.
You definitely need to be doing other things. And then in terms of freelancing, I think that is going to become even more the norm. In fact, the statistics are that by 2020, 40 to 50% of the world population are going to be freelance.
There's a name for that, isn't there? Something like there's a cyber worker or something. But that was an interesting statistic. I've seen that before. I mean, it's like a 20 now, and it's just going to be more. And
it is. Yeah. And then, I mean, if you just look at statistics for the U.S., it's
how
significant.
Much?
So in the US, it's between 15 and 20% of the workforce are freelancing or working from home. So, you know, there's a lot of people who are still working for a company but work from home.
So that's why I like your story, because you really did a lot of freelancing. And then you went to the ebooks. So everybody thinks, oh, yeah, it only took her 1 year to be successful with the ebooks. But, in the project management point of view, okay, maybe. But you had a lot of you put a lot of time in.
Yes, definitely.
So what's up next for you?
Gosh, more books. I'm now writing fiction. So I'm actually co-authoring a fiction book with Steve Windsor. So we're writing
Can you tell us what it's about?
Yes, I can. I'm just in the process of, like, Steve's just gone through and done his the first draft, so I'm doing the second draft right now. So I've just finished my read through, and now I'm going in and doing the writing portion of it. So it's called Dixon with two X's, and she is a teenage witch. So I'm a huge YA fan, so that's all I read is
cool.
YA.
So
I said to Steve, I approached Steve with this idea because I've never written fiction. Steve is a prolific fiction author. I said to him, okay, for my first fiction book, I want some help. I don't think I'm going to be able to do this on my own. It's quite a different space to get into. So he kindly accepted the challenge of co-authoring with me. So
we're
hoping to launch that in March. It's been amazing. Yeah.
That's right around the corner.
It is only just around the corner. It will depend on the editor, actually. So actually it might be closer to April by the time the editor gets through it. So we're trying to keep it like a novella, but at the moment it's 45,000 words, and that's without me having been through it.
Grand is a novel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I know, because I said to Steve, I said, let's just shoot for a novella, because Steve's novels are, you know, 80, 90,000 words. He's a prolific fiction writer. He's got some pretty big books out there. So fiction is what I'm looking at. Plus, I'm also expanding No Gym Needed and Side Hustle Blueprint. Nice. So those are the two.
You're going to do a 99-cent launch for your new book?
Yes, we will be doing it.
Let me know about it.
I will.
Cool.
I will.
So let's get back to your course.
Mm-hmm.
So what else? What did we not touch on? Can you give us any juicy tidbits or something?
Well, I'm pretty sure I there were a couple of things that I sort of, if people were listening, they would have picked up on. But probably the biggest tip that I can say, that if you are looking, particularly if you're looking to go on Upwork, is to make sure that your profile is 100% complete. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is making sure that you do the skills tests that you, that prove that the skill that you are looking to get started with Upwork on, that you can do it.
Uh-huh.
So that's one area that people let themselves down in, is they think, oh, I'll get to those later. No, do that first before you even approach a client. And then the second thing is that once you've done those first initial jobs, you know, where you've been paid low, mm-hmm. and now you're ready to find and work with the quality clients, don't mm-hmm. search your skill, search dollar amounts. That's uh-huh. where you'll find the clients who are prepared to pay the money that you're looking to make. So I am consistently looking, searching, you know, $500 type work. And mm-hmm. the thing is, if you find those clients, they tend to be the ones that will work with you ongoing.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw that either on your blog or in your materials, mm-hmm. and that was a very good tip. Yeah,
because it's those clients are generally the ones that actually need an ongoing mm-hmm. Support and help. So there's lots of little things like that just mm-hmm. make quite a big difference. And mm-hmm. probably the only other thing that I would say is that if you are just starting out and maybe you don't have a portfolio, is mm-hmm. to create those portfolio items. So even if you haven't done work for somebody else, it's just to go ahead and create them. So my favorite example of this is if you are a web designer or you're a book cover designer or something like that, just go ahead and create a book cover, or go ahead and recreate a website, or show how you would improve an existing website.
Nice.
What
yeah.
would be your take on it? And when people do that and clients see that you've taken that initiative, mm-hmm. It definitely gives you some brownie points.
Awesome. So, and your course is for beginners and advanced?
It is basically for anybody that is wanting to start a side hustle. It is focused on anyone that has been sitting around, like, you know, just like I did for 6 months, looking at writing ebooks, mm-hmm. Trying to figure out how I was going to do that. If you've been sitting there trying mm-hmm. to figure out what it is that you want to do with your life, mm-hmm. if you're not happy doing what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, then this will definitely help you figure out where you want to go.
And what was the ZBooks code?
It's just ZBooks. That's all in capitals.
Cool. Okay. So you're giving ZBooks readers a big discount. I really appreciate that. That's awesome. And you
don't share it with anybody else.
Okay. Be quiet. Okay. I forgot to ask you something. Do you have a morning routine?
I do have a morning routine. So I just got this. I have been doing this for a while, but I backed a Kickstarter campaign last year for this thing called the Self Journal.
Oh, yeah.
And it just arrived this week, and I am completely in love with it. I actually just did a vlog on my blog. I just did a video, video review of the Self Journal. So basically, what I do is I am up at 5:30 in the morning, and I'm up early. I'm a morning person, so it's definitely my husband is not, so he's still in bed.
Like
so I'm up at 5:30. I meditate for 10 minutes, then I grab my Self Journal and I plan out my day.
Interesting.
Sit down, work out what my goals are for the day. It's just for the day, so that's the focus is on what I'm doing for the day. So the unique thing about the Self Journal is that it's all about having no blank spaces in your time from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. Mm. There should be no blank space. Now, that doesn't mean that you're working all that time. It's just being intentional with your time. So if you're having lunch, then you put that in the calendar. If you're having some downtime, you put that in the calendar. It's just so you know where your time is. And then I'll have my coffee, which isn't.
So you meditate, do your journal, and you have your coffee.
I have my coffee. And then I'll open my computer.
And what is your method of meditation?
So I use an app called Calm. It is beautiful. If you just need calm, like the word calm.
Right.
It's just called it's the Calm app. So they have this really great, it's free, and they have a 7-day beginner program, and then everything else after that is obviously paid. But even if just to go through that process, if you need to, you know, once you learn how to meditate for yourself, I use it to just play the background noise, which is a creek with birds singing, and it's beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah. So I haven't been meditating for very long, and it's still something fairly new for me. But I'm practicing mindfulness. So it's definitely helping. Meditation can be hard if you fight against trying to make it perfect, because it's not about. So that's
cool.
That's my morning routine.
Nice. So, is there anything else you want to tell us?
No, I think that's it. Just that if you are sitting there just wondering what to do, just figure it out and take action. Whatever it is that you decide to do, is to just do. Actually, go ahead and do it. Don't sit there and read theory and think about it. Do it.
And I have personally tested your whole website, and I can tell everybody, go to Lisa's website. If you're going to write a book, look at her 3-blog series. How it's excellent, excellent, mandatory reading. And yes, go get her 7-day challenge with Upwork, and she'll show you how to set up your profile and everything. Please do that before you go to Upwork. It's awesome. Yeah, I'm doing it right now. And right, Lisa, anything else?
No, just that if people are trying to find the website, it's outsourcedfreelancingsuccess.com, and I will give Eric the link to the course so that you've got the direct link.
Lisa, it's been excellent talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. Yeah, you're in the middle of a launch. I wish you all the success in the world. I know how hectic a launch is, so I want you to ace your course there. And everybody, go check out her website and sign up for her course. You get a discount with ZBooks. It's awesome.
Yes.
And thanks again, Lisa. And I will hope to talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Eric.
Okay. Over and out.
Thank you.